JC Corcoran Podcast.
I'm in Los Angeles, so I've been saying all morning that, I'm here in the studio of a very, very famous broadcaster. Here's the man himself.
Well, this is Casey Kasem, along with JC. The last time I was in St. Louis was for the David Letterman show.
Casey and I were on the Casino Queen doing a live shot, Pants Across America.
Pants Across America. He does some dumb things.
I'm surprised to see you here this early in the morning. Are you getting ready to record your show?
Yeah, we're doing our special. We do three specials a year, counting down the year-end hits.
What do you think? You walk into work on a Monday morning and you see JC in your studio.
No, I just thought I was fired. That's all.
Thank you very much for coming by.
JC, what a pleasure.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
And with that, we say good morning and hello for Wednesday, May 19th, 2021, here at JCOnTheLine.com. Sorry about yesterday. In full disclosure, here's what happened. You know, I'm having a lot of neck trouble right now. At the risk of sounding like an old man sitting on the park bench telling you about his lumbago, I've had two cervical surgeries over the years, one in 90 and one in 95. And the last MRI I had, the guy told me, he said, you got the back of a 95-year-old man. I don't know what the comeback is for that. I'm just like, oh, well, thank you. And so periodically I have tremendous neck pain, and it shoots up into the back of your head, and it's just awful. And it's been really, really bad the last couple of weeks. And I've been going to physical therapy three times a week. I'm taking pain pills, which make you goofy. I was on steroids for a while. You try all this different stuff. And people always say, have you tried acupuncture? And it's like, yes, I have tried acupuncture, and it didn't work. So I was desperate the other night, and even though it's expensive, and I consider $60 plus a $10 tip expensive, I said to myself, you know, maybe what if I just got a massage and just told the masseuse, just don't worry about my legs and my back and all that sort of stuff. Just spend the entire hour working on my neck and my shoulder. Just do that. And after an hour, I mean, who knows? And I go in there, and it was just what I was hoping for, because when you have something like this, you're not looking for some hot little 25-year-old masseuse. You're looking for what I got, which was a 45-year-old Ukrainian woman. And, she just sort of had that devilish look on her face when I walked in, like, I will not hurt you. Like, no, go ahead, hurt me. Because sometimes when you're getting physical therapy or a massage, if you're in this kind of shape that I was, you're looking for that fine line between pain and pleasure. You want the massage to feel good, but at the same time, you're there for something therapeutic, and you need somebody to come within, a quarter of an inch of actually hurting you. And I'm telling you, this woman had hands the size of toilet seats, and she started working on my neck, and she did that for the entire hour, and it took away probably about 80% of the pain. Now, it's starting to come back a little bit today, but I think maybe if I see her one or two more times, I will be in love with this Ukrainian woman. So I was recovering from that yesterday morning and not feeling very well, and so that's why I wasn't here. But here we are today in our top story. A man is suing Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop website because he bought one of those "This Smells Like My Vagina" candles, and it exploded. Goop calls it, quote, a frivolous attempt to secure an outsized payment from a press-heavy product, end quote. I've told this story a couple of times. I worked in the Channel 4 newsroom for 6 years, and for, I want to say, 3 of those years, I had an assistant news director, a good guy. He was not a barrel of laughs. He was a fairly serious guy, and you need those people in the newsroom. You need goofballs who will yell stupid stuff, because you're sitting in a newsroom and all this terrible stuff is happening, And all over the, I was just doing the entertainment stuff, but I was sitting right there in the newsroom at my desk with everybody else, and you're surrounded by this stuff. And there's plane crashes, and there's murders, and there's little kids getting abducted, and there's all this awful stuff. And so you need that sort of comic relief, or at least some dark humor or something when you're working in a television newsroom. So you need that. But then you also need the serious people. You need the people who keep their nose to the grindstone and make sure that it doesn't get too silly and that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and, you know, you have all your sources and you're not going to make a stupid mistake and all that. And that, for about 3 years in the Channel 4 newsroom, this was in the 90s, was a guy in the name of Tom Bell. And Tom had moved here from the Detroit area to be the assistant news director at Channel 4. And then he, I think after those 3 years, he went back to Detroit and then got himself a news director job. So, you know, sometimes you have to do that. You have to take a step back to take a step forward. And that's what Tom Bell did. Tom had, at that time, a couple of young kids. One of those kids turned out to be an actress by the name of Kristen Bell. She's been in like half the movies made in the last 15 years. And she is married to Dax Shepard. And Dax Shepard is he's crazy, man. He's funny. There's a movie called Baby Mama that came out about maybe about 12, 15 years ago with Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Steve Martin is in it, Greg Kinnear. Oh, and Dax Shepard is the comic relief in this thing. And he is the funniest person I'd seen in a movie maybe that year and maybe for 3 or 5 years on either side of that year. So they, I think they have a little fun with the press. I think they're always saying like silly things just to maybe to entertain themselves. I don't know. Anyhow, the latest story regarding Kristen Bell is that she experimented with magic mushrooms as a treatment for depression. And at one point, she thought her legs were a beautiful lady. These are her quotes. A beautiful lady who picked her up and took her to the bathroom to pee. I've never done mushrooms, but after that story, I'm not compelled to either. Oh, we lost a good one yesterday. We lost a good one. Charles Grodin died yesterday after a battle with bone cancer. He was 86 years old. He had a very good toupee, and I think that made him look quite a bit younger than he actually was. 86 years old. Anyhow, he was in the first two Beethoven movies, 92 and 93. That was the first time, unfortunately, a lot of people had seen him. You go back to 1972, and there's a movie that he made with Sybil Shepherd and Eddie Albert from Green Acres called The Heartbreak Kid, 1972. Now, Ben Stiller remade the movie in 2007. It was a piece of junk. But if you have the opportunity and you've never seen it, or maybe if you have and you just want to see it again, back to 1972, the original Heartbreak Kid, my God, is he good in it. He was also briefly in a couple of scenes in Rosemary's Baby. How great was he in Heaven Can Wait, the Buck Henry project? He was in the King Kong remake, and a lot of people will just remember him from the 1988 movie Midnight Run with Robert De Niro. I just keep saying that over and over again. How great was he? And I think the Kevin Kline movie, Dave, is on the list of a lot of people's favorite movies of all time. And he was so great in that, too. I have no other adjectives or descriptive phrases to say about this guy other than he was great. He would steal every scene he was in. When he delivered that line in Dave where he said, "If I ran my business like this, I'd be out of business," talking about the White House budget, I mean, the place went up. The whole theater just started laughing hysterically. It was such a great line, and he delivered it beautifully. I love Bratwurst. Oh, man. I had a chance to interview him once. He did a movie with Jim Belushi back around, oh, my God, this must have been 30 years ago. And I interviewed him for that, and he was just full of the devil, just full of the devil. He was so good in everything he was in. Charles Grodin, 86 years old. One door opens, another door closes. 42-year-old Jennifer Love Hewitt, pregnant with their third child. There's some uproar online over the fact that Paul Rudd isn't listed among the guest stars on the Friends reunion show. Maybe it'll be a surprise. Who knows? This Olympic snowboarder, Tora Bright, she is a fine physical specimen, a tremendous athlete, And, you know, ESPN started doing this a couple of years ago where they'd put out a special edition, I guess it was every year, where they had athletes posing nude, but you didn't see anything. They were just basically showing off these toned, muscular bodies. I still want to see the goods, but this wasn't bad either. Later on, unrelated to the actual ESPN photo shoots, some other athletes started doing this. So this Olympic snowboarder does one of these handstands. Actually, it's a headstand. So she's on her head. Her legs are sticking straight up in the air. She is nude. And her little baby boy, who appears to be maybe 6, 8 months old, he's also nude. And he is sucking on her teat. She is breastfeeding him while she's doing a headstand. And she put this picture up on the internet yesterday and immediately was met with an avalanche of haters. Not exactly sure what their objection was, but, you know, there's a lot of bored people who just sit there and express outrage at every stupid little thing that they see. And so that was the big activity on the internet yesterday. Last summer, obviously a bust as far as travel was concerned, but this summer, I think everybody's going to be out. So where to go? WalletHub.com crunched the numbers to create a list of the best budget-friendly U.S. destinations. So what they did is they analyzed 100 of the largest metro areas across 42 key indicators, stuff like the price of the flight, the local cost of living, the number of attractions, weather, safety, the number of beer gardens per capita. In the end, Orlando, Florida comes out number one. Honolulu, second, followed by New Orleans, rest of the top 10. Austin, Texas, Atlanta, Salt Lake City, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Los Angeles, Oklahoma City, and Little Rock, Arkansas. So in the top 10, there's two cities from Oklahoma and one from Arkansas? I don't think so. The worst city to visit is Lansing, Michigan. I lived there for a year, and I can concur. Ventura County, California, just north of L.A., was second worst, followed by Fort Myers, Florida. Why? It's Florida. All of Florida is great, especially if you've been living through a Midwestern winter. I don't understand that at all. Portland, Maine. Everybody loves going to Portland. And Allentown, Pennsylvania. And you knew this was coming. Ford, the Ford Motor Company, just filed for a patent for a new technology that would put ads right on your dashboard. Most new cars have a lot of cameras now, like backup cameras or ones that show your blind spots, and they want to use all those cameras to scan billboards. So ads for the same company would pop up on your dashboard's infotainment screen. They claim it would solve the problem of people seeing a billboard too late and not getting all the details, like which exit to take for the next McDonald's. But is this something we want? And like a lot of apps, could car companies eventually charge extra if you don't want to see the ads? And what about the whole idea of keeping your eyes on the frickin' road? You can get a ticket if some cop's in a bad mood and sees something hanging from your rear view mirror because it's a distraction and it's illegal. But we have these panels on our dashboard now, which, you know, again, they're called infotainment screens. And now they want 61-year-old guy in Myrtle Beach named Fred Funny, F-U-N-N-Y-E, Fred Funny. And you knew there was going to be a problem right there. He's been dating. He's 61, he's been dating a 27-year-old woman for about 4 years. About 5 months ago, they moved in together, and now they're engaged. He proposed to her at Walmart. First classy move right there. So you know this could only get better. Their fairy tale romance might be on the rocks after he came home drunk on Sunday night and started a fight about her not doing enough, shall we say, favors for him. Sex, we assume, and it ended with him throwing a bucket of pee at her. It's not clear why, but Fred keeps a bucket in the house that he uses to relieve himself in, and he decided to use it as a weapon. He was passed out when the police got there, so they had to wake him up, and he claimed he didn't do it, but the police report describes her clothes as soaked in urine. He's facing domestic violence charges. And a 24-year-old Florida man was arrested for speeding after going 100 miles an hour. When the cops caught him, he said he was trying to drive back to Cuba. It's unclear if he thought he could actually drive all the way there. He did have two passports with him. And now this.
There we go. Top 10 perks of being a member of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Number 10, he's a member of baseball's elite 3,000 hit club, Lou Brock, everybody.
I get a ballpark drink for a reduced price of only $20.
There you go. Thank you very much. Number 9, he hit 573 home runs in 22 seasons, Harmon Killebrew.
If I don't have the money for the Domino Kid, I just hand him any old bat and say, I use this one for my 500th home run.
Number 8, he was named 18 consecutive All-Star teams, Brooks Robinson.
I once saw Earl Weaver naked.
Yeah. Top 10 perks of being a member of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Number 7, the only man to lead his league in home runs 7 years in a row, Ralph Kiner.
All the rosin you can eat.
Not a bad deal. He won the MVP and Cy Young Awards in 1981, Raleigh Fingers.
I'm not just a guy with a crazy mustache. I'm a Hall of Famer with a crazy mustache.
That's right. Number 5, he won 20 games 5 times and the Cy Young Award twice, Bob Gibson.
I got to do Hall of Fame stuff. Perfect excuse to get out of the plans the wife made.
Yeah, exactly. Number 4, 300 game winning knuckleballer Phil Niekro.
I can ride out on the field shirtless, and there ain't a damn thing you can do about it.
Number 3. He pitched 3 no-hitters and led the league in wins 6 times, Bob Feller.
Get you a pair on a lame late-night talk show.
Number 2, 13-time Gold Glove winner at shortstop, Ozzie Smith.
We're the only ones who can rebroadcast or retransmit an account of a game without the express written consent of Major League Baseball.
And the number one perk of being a member of the National Baseball Hall of Fame, this weekend he'll be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, All-Star catcher Gary Carter.
One free swing at a costume mascot of my choice.
I love that bit. I missed the top 10 lists, by the way. Tomorrow is the 6th anniversary of the final Late Show with David Letterman show. I've had the honor and the privilege of not only interviewing David Letterman, oh my gosh, probably 12, 13, 14 times over the years, but also being in the crowd, being backstage, and just having access to so many cool things regarding Dave's show. I love Dave. I've always loved Dave. I loved him before he was famous. And there is a degree of reverence that emerges when people who are in the entertainment business start talking about David Letterman. Because back in 1982, when he launched that show on NBC, it sort of changed everything. And it's hard to calculate the hundreds, perhaps thousands of people that got into the entertainment business because they were inspired by all the goofiness on that original 11:30 show that David Letterman used to do on NBC following Johnny Carson. Over the years, I had the rare privilege of having a little special sneak peek under the curtain behind the scenes of what goes on when you put on a late night television talk show like this. There's a guy by the name of Chris Albers. Chris is from St. Louis, and I had only been in St. Louis a couple of months when I was solicited, shall we say, by a high school senior at St. Louis University High to come and speak at their pep rally. I took that opportunity, had a lot of fun doing it, And that guy, Chris Albers, who I just mentioned, was that senior. He then moved to New York to go to Fordham University, became a NBC page, one of those people in the little jackets that walks around and directs you to certain things or answers questions, conducts tours and stuff like that. So he was doing that, worked his way onto the staff of Paul Schaefer, became Paul Schaefer's personal assistant, started submitting ideas for jokes and scripts for bits and things like that, which Letterman's people thought were very entertaining, hired him as a writer. He started writing, and then he started writing himself into some of the bits and performed a bunch of them. His most famous was Dwight the Troubled Teen, which you're going to hear Chris talk about here in just a couple of seconds. But keep in mind, this is a guy who grew up in St. Louis and went on to write for Conan and Bill Maher and Jon Stewart, and for 14 years was Conan O'Brien's monologue writer. And as Dave was preparing to go off the air 6 years ago tomorrow, Chris and I had a great conversation about the end of the David Letterman era. Chris Albers, our JC Celebrity A-List interview of the day.
All right, let's talk about a character that you wrote, and you ended up doing two spots. Now, two spots are, it's a comedic term, you know, sort of like Sonny and Cher or the Smothers Brothers or whatever, but you have one relatively straight man, and then you got another guy doing the jokes, Dwight the Troubled Teen. Tell me the whole story about how this thing got on the air.
Well, I would love to take credit for that, but I actually did not write or create Dwight. It was created by, I believe, Steve O'Donnell, who was head writer at the time. And by that point, I had been on the show as an actor probably, I don't know, not dozens of times. Over time, they started casting me in roles where I would just yell at Dave. And for whatever reason, Dave got a kick out of that. And so they kept casting me and writing for me viewer mail bits and stuff where somehow it always ended up with me screaming at Dave. So they came up with this running character, I guess, born out of that idea. It was Dwight the Troubled Teen, and, you know, he'd wear like a collar, a high school Letterman jacket, and would come out and just looking all pissed off and annoyed that he's called to even talk to anybody. And it was never really explained what the relationship was. It was sort of like a father-son relationship. Yes. But clearly I wasn't his son. But he would, you know, Dave would just say, you know, Dwight, you know, we heard that you were stealing candy down at the, down at the supermarket. And then, you know, I would just, you know, like, well, what do you care? You know, and he would say, well, Dwight, you know, it's important to be responsible and to, you know, not break the law. And it would just go on, and I would snap back at him. And every time it would end with me insulting him in some way. And then my exit line was always, I hate you. I hate all of you. And then I would just storm off. And there was like soap opera theme music that would begin and end the segment. And then Dave would sometimes afterwards say, how old is that kid? You know, because I clearly didn't look like a teenager anymore. Although I guess I was only like 21, 22. They had me back on the CBS show 2 or 3 years ago. And I was playing the fictional son of the owner of CBS, and I just decided to have a picnic on the set with my buddies, and we were drinking and we were making too much noise in the middle of the segment, and Dave's like, excuse me, can I help you? And it's you know, it's basically Dwight the Troubled Teen again, and it was just me saying, you know, listen, boy, you know, you better worry about who you're talking to here. And it goes on and on, and eventually I tell him off, and I think we're going to go over to another one of my friend's house and drink because their dad isn't home, and I think we're going to listen to Vampire Weekend or something like that. But it ends the same way, and then I leave, and he once again says, "How old is that kid?" You know, and that was the other thing, is it was thrilling to see him read my jokes. I mean, he was the reason I moved to New York. He and Steve Martin were the reasons I was interested in comedy. So that was amazing. But when suddenly I found myself in the sketches, and it was just the two of us, I just was thinking to myself, this cannot be real. He actually knows my name. And it was just unbelievable. And the Dwight thing went on to be kind of so successful that Friday Night Videos asked me back when there was one, when there were videos and there was a show named Friday Night Videos, they asked me to host the show. I hosted the show for about 5-6 weeks and or co-hosted it. And then I remember the first time I was with Larry Bud Melman and Ozzy Osbourne. And that was an odd day.
As you've watched the show, especially the last couple of years, and Dave is so uncomfortable with stuff like this, you know, especially in these final years, it seems like maybe he understands that whether he likes it or not, a lot of people, and we're talking both fans and journalists, all sorts of media, are sort of taking what he has accomplished in his career and placing it in a very special place in the entertainment history annals.
Absolutely, and they should. I mean, he changed everything. And so Dave comes along after getting his big shot on The Tonight Show and then being asked to be guest host when Johnny wasn't there, which he did a bunch of times. And Johnny offers them the show because in Johnny's contract, he has control of the time slot that comes on right after him. And he loves Dave, and he decides to give Dave the show, but with certain stipulations. He insisted that the show not look too much like The Tonight Show because none of these guys want a guy breathing down their neck showing that they can do the same thing better than you can, whether or not that'll happen. They don't want to take the chance. So Dave was told you can't have a big band. You can only have a rhythm section. You can't tell a long monologue. You can't do any of the bits that are similar to ours. And so sort of out of necessity, but I think also out of Dave's quirky sense of humor, this anti-talk show was really born, which nobody could have imagined how to do at that time. Now we all take it for granted because most of the guys that came after him, or I would say all of them, have borrowed and gone to school on Dave and are basically doing some version of what Dave created. But there was nothing like that at the time. And so it's hard for people to understand that now who weren't there to see the transition. But, I mean, he really is a giant in television and was so innovative and just changed the whole game.
For people who are unfamiliar with the process of working on a late night television show and writing jokes and stuff like that, maybe their only frame of reference is the Dick Van Dyke Show. And they think that everybody just sort of sits around and hangs out with the host and that's the way it is. What was Dave like just to talk to?
Well, you know, each host is different in terms of how much contact you have. Like some, like Conan and John, you would have a lot of contact with. Bill Maher, you just had negative contact with. Dave really worked most of the stuff out with his head writer. So the writers didn't really have much one-on-one time in terms of giving him ideas about what to do differently. Nor would I have felt like I could give Dave a suggestion that would be more brilliant than what he would come up with. So most of my interaction with him was when we'd be on the set shooting something and there's a technical problem or whatever, and we're suddenly hanging out there for 15 minutes, and he would just talk to you about regular stuff. I mean, he hated, if he got the sense you were fawning all over him, he didn't want anything to do with that conversation. So if you couldn't talk about regular stuff, you knew that the conversation was going to be over. He also, at that time, every Friday night, we would go up to Central Park and we would play softball. And he would, you know, he would come up there, and that's when he was probably most relaxed because it was the end of the week. And, you know, he was just giving everybody trouble and got really competitive about whether his side was winning or not, and was a good athlete. And so, you know, there were a lot of fun times like that.
On some level, David Letterman seemed to connect with the American viewing public on a level that was different from previous talk show hosts, whether you're talking about Johnny Carson. And again, that was a very emotional time when Johnny Carson went off the air for a lot of people. This is different in some way, and I can't put my finger on it. Have you been able to sort of summarize what's going on here in terms of people's sort of gut level reaction to the fact that Dave is going to be signing off here in a couple of days?
For me, I feel like I'm losing a third parent, and the staff is going through the same thing. And so we've all been talking, and it's really hard for everybody because Dave hates this stuff. And, you know, everybody wants to go up and tell him how he's changed their life. And, you know, you see on the show now that the guests all want to do that. And he's finally resigned himself to, okay, that's going to happen. I guess if I fight it, it'll last longer. But the staff is really going through a tough time because he did change all our lives, and everybody that's there is there because they share his sensibility. I think, you know, if he's in a bad mood, you're going to see it come out on the show. And sometimes it's a lot of fun to see Dave in a bad mood or to dump all over a bit that he's doing, or you see that he's interviewing some idiot actress from a sitcom that is not even doing that well, and he couldn't be less interested. It's fun to watch him in those moments, but it's more than that. He is willing to have guests on that other people won't have on just because he finds it interesting, and you find it interesting because you can tell how into it he is. He's also shared so much of his life with us through the transition from NBC to CBS, and how disappointed he was that he didn't get the Tonight Show, which Johnny wanted him to have, to his heart attack where he almost died, and nobody knew if he was going to come back, and when he came back and talked about it and brought his doctors out, like, you just felt like he's including you in his life. And 9/11 is another great example. He was the first guy to make it okay to go back on television, and his first guest was Rudy Giuliani, and he kind of talked America through that moment. You know, his scandal that he had a few years ago, he immediately came out and talked about it and said, here's what's going on, and apologized to everybody involved and to the audience, and said, I feel like I've let you all down. So, I mean, I just think you've felt like you know Dave.
And, of course, there was the birth of Harry, too.
Oh, sure. I mean, you can tell how much he loves that boy and how much he's changed Dave's life. I mean, it's so genuine when you see him talk about Harry and show, you know, pictures. And just like any friend that has kids, you know, you don't always want to see the pictures, but, you know, you can tell it's genuine. The same thing with his auto racing. You know, I don't need to see Dave show any more clips of auto racing and say that we came in second and everybody gets a milkshake. You know, to me, that's just eating up time, which I wish he would be doing something else with. But you see how passionate he is about it. So you end up being interested, even if you wish he were doing something else.
All right, Chris, great stuff as always. Thanks very much for being part of this show. I can't thank you enough here. You gave me...
Well, I'm going to stop you.
You gave me great stuff.
I'm going to do what people are doing on Dave right now. I want to say to you, first of all, you have had a longer run than David Letterman, who has had the longest run in television. But you and I have known each other since, I think, 1984. And you've been so kind to me on the air over the years. But I don't think people realize how good of friends we are. And, you know, you've met my friends so many times, and even they don't realize how good of friends we are and how much we talk and how you've, you know, been there for me when my parents died, when, you know, we've been to Chicago so many times together, even visited you down in Texas. And, you know, after 9/11, I think a few days after that, you came up to New York for a John Lennon tribute. And I was in really rough shape.
I ended up with the tickets for that trip to come to New York because everybody in St. Louis was afraid to come to New York. And I said, look, I think the worst is over. It's not like they're going to attack the city again. I think this is going to be a great show. I want to see it. I also want to witness how the city is bouncing back. I want to be part of that. And also my buddy is up there, and I can tell that this is a rough time for everybody. And so it meant as much to me to be there for you while that was going on, especially the post 9/11 stuff. So we were on the same page.
Well, it was incredible. And I've gotten to know Clarissa, who I adore, and Francesca. And I just hope everybody realizes in St. Louis how lucky they are that you're back, because what you're doing is so rare to have this long of a stretch. And I just think the world of you. And I know you probably want to hear that about as much as Dave does, but there it is.
Well, thank you. Now kiss me. The sixth anniversary of the end of an era, David Letterman's final show on the CBS television network 6 years ago tomorrow. And we thank our buddy Chris Albers, not only for the great commentary and behind-the-scenes view of Dave's show, but also for the kind words. Chris is a good guy. All right, that's it. The 19th of May, 2021, the podcast is now in the can. We are here every weekday morning, except yesterday. Sorry about that. We post at 7 o'clock in the morning, but you can download it and listen whenever you want. You can follow me on Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. My email is jc@jconline.com, jc@jconline.com. Let me know how we're doing here and continue. Please spread the word about the J.C. Corcoran podcast here at jconline.com. Have a great day. Talk to you in the morning. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
J.C. Corcoran Podcast.